ladies and gentlemen. We'll go ahead and do roll call. This is the Public Utilities Commission meeting in Pierre, and we'll do roll call so we can figure out who we have on the telephone line. First, Ed Goss. Okay. Jerry Glanzer. Rod Tobin. David Wade. Well, maybe we'll pause for just a moment to make sure that we have a telephone line active. Mary Sisick?
Present.
Great, thanks. Jason Smiley?
Here.
Okay, great. Rand Kelch? Okay, great. Well, the phone line.
Rod Tobin.
Is joining the meeting.
Good morning, Mr. Tobin.
Good morning.
Dusty Johnson here in Pierre, and we are about ready to get started. We did just do a roll call on the phone, so we wanted to acknowledge you're on. Thanks.
Thank you.
Yeah, you bet. With that, we are going to go ahead and get started. This is the Public Utilities Commission meeting for Tuesday, September 11, 2007 at 9:30 in the morning. We're here in the state capitol, room 412, Pierre. I'm Commissioner Dusty Johnson. Joining me here in Pierre are Commissioners Gary Hansen and Steve Kolbeck. We have a relatively brief agenda today. We will begin with an administrative item, approval of the minutes of the commission meeting held on July 11, 2007. Those minutes have been circulated. Are there any corrections or amendments? Hearing none, I will move to approve the minutes. Motion has been made. No second is required. There is no discussion. We'll proceed to vote. Kolbeck.
Aye.
Hansen.
Aye.
Johnson votes aye. Motion carries 3-0. Agenda item number 2 is consumer reports, and we will look to Ms. Gregg for an update on consumer inquiries and complaints.
Thank you, Chairman Johnson. The Commission has received a total of 73 contacts since the last report was prepared for the August 28, 2007 Commission meeting. 26 of the contacts involved telecommunications, 18 of the contacts involved electrical services, 4 contacts involved natural gas service, 4 contacts involved cell phone services, 10 contacts related to the Do Not Call Registry, and 11 contacts related to issues not regulated by the PUC. 1,454 of the 1,678 complaints received in 2007 have been resolved, and 2,270 of the 2,466 complaints received in 2006 have been resolved.
Any questions or comments from Ms. Gregg? I know we have concluded fair season. Deb, and I know you and your staff, I mean everybody at the PUC, but most notably your staff worked very hard in doing consumer outreach and helping folks out. I know we touched, you know, literally thousands of people. So I just wanted to thank you and your team for all of your hard work.
Thank you.
Any other questions or comments? Hearing none, we'll proceed to hydrocarbon pipeline portion of the agenda. HP07-001 does deal with the Keystone pipeline project. The question before the commission today is, how shall the commission proceed regarding establishing a scheduling and procedural order? A draft timeline was put together by Mr. Smith, and I know he's been attempting to reach some consensus with the parties. We'll look to Mr. Smith for an update and any comments he might have.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I circulated a draft following some initial email exchanges with the involved parties as you and the discussion had at the last commission meeting. I circulated a draft to them, the parties who had appeared and expressed themselves relative to schedule on August 23rd. We attempted then for a while to set up a scheduling conference to discuss it, and I had a little trouble getting that done. And in the interim, I had a Supreme Court hearing and got off the track a little bit, but. Yesterday, we were finally able to put together a scheduling conference among the parties who had been involved in the scheduling discussions. Participating were myself presiding, Reed Rasmussen representing Webb, Kurt Hone on behalf of Webb and himself, Brett Kennecke on behalf of the applicant, and Kara Van Bockern, Semler, on behalf of staff. After a considerable discussion, we did reach concurrence or agreement on a schedule. And if you'd like, I'd go over that, and then maybe the parties can confirm if they want to or disagree if they believe I've gotten it wrong. But basically, should I go over that?
Well, and was this posted on the internet?
This particular one has not been yet.
Okay. Then why don't you go over? It looks like there are five dates, and so if you just want to briefly summarize them, that'd be good.
Yeah, we have one additional date, and that was part of the compromise that was reached. This was late in the day yesterday, and I was unable to get my redraft done. I've got the draft version here, but it's not done yet, so I was unable to post it. The first date would be for applicants' direct testimony filed and served is September 21st. Again, that's a little bit later than the discussion had at the August 7th meeting. The reason for backing that up was North Dakota scheduling hearings in the week immediately prior to the original date that we had talked about at the meeting, and also the kind of sooner than anticipated issuance of the draft environmental impact statement and the scheduling of a very great number of hearings out there, which at least to me when I put together the original draft justified maybe moving that back a little bit so the applicant would not be forced to try to be in two places at once. The second date, and it's approximately 6 weeks later, is October 31st, 2007, and that's for interveners and staff's direct testimony filed and served. The third date is November 14th, 2007, and that's for applicants' rebuttal testimony filed and served. The fourth date is November 28th, 2007, and that is for interveners and staff's surrebuttal testimony filed and served, and that's the new entry on here. Mr. Rasmussen had requested the opportunity to file surrebuttal, pre-filed, and a compromise was reached on that, and we've added that onto the schedule. The next dates on the proposed schedule are December 3rd through the 14th, and that would be the evidentiary hearing right here in room 412. And the last date falls in the middle of those dates, and that's December 6th, 2007, and that would be the date for a final public input hearing for persons who wish to provide comments to the commission as opposed to formal evidentiary admissions. And those are the dates. The remaining items on here really deal with filing and service, and what we've had some, I've had a preliminary email exchange, and we have discussed to the extent possible doing service by email with respect to all parties who have filed an email address with us. And one of the primary reasons for that is just speed, in that when we're dealing with time frames that toward the end of the schedule get a little bit crunched, email filing, email service can literally add as many as 3 to 4 days to the real time available to parties to be able to review documents that are served and begin to prepare responsive testimony. And lastly, what I thought I would do, and again, I might want to throw that out for the commission's consideration. I know in the Big Stone scheduling order, we did provide that sometimes in these cases, some of the submittals can be very bulky and with a lot of graphic information in there, that a party who has been served by email who, for whatever reason, would like then, because of the nature of the documents or whatever, to request service on paper, could make a request, and then the party who made the service would follow up with a paper service. And again, that's something that I've circulated around a little bit by email since our meeting yesterday. I did receive positive feedback from the two attorneys who have been involved. I haven't heard from everyone, but again, it was a pretty workable procedure. It worked well in the Big Stone case, just throwing that out, I guess, for discussion.
Well, Mr. Smith, I will mention that I'm pleasantly surprised that the parties who had taken an interest in scheduling were able to come to an agreement. I didn't necessarily know that would be possible with all of the different interests and agendas at play here. So thank you to your hard work and for everybody else for reaching this consensus. Maybe we should probably see if anybody else, not just those interested in scheduling, but anybody who's been granted party status, has any concerns or issues with this, and then we'll move to commissioner comments and questions. Any parties to the case have any issues or comments they'd like to make with regard to this scheduling? Hearing none, commissioner comments, questions, advisor comments, questions?
I just have the one. excuse me. I know. I realize everyone's in agreement. I'm just a little – I just want to make sure that landowners who don't have electronic access, that's proper time, isn't it, for proper mail, snail mail exchanges?
Yes. I guess I'm proposing is that with respect to people – and our rules do now provide for electronic filing and service. But we do have exception in there for people that do not have that capability for whatever reason. Sometimes it's – people may have a computer, they may have a internet connection, but we got a lot of elderly people involved in the case, and I know my father being one of them, he might be able to get on the internet, but he sure as heck can't figure out how to scan a PDF document and do anything with it. and they're just, not everybody out there is as equipped as our normal cast of characters here to effectively deal with email and e-service. So my thought would be that with respect to those persons and with respect to anyone who out there who wants to notify us that they're not easily able to deal with that, that we will provide paper service. And that would be my thought. I'm more thinking with respect to the really true active parties, though, e-service is really, really beneficial, I think, because you get documents right now. And in the case of, like, service on a Friday, I mean, that can literally mean 3 to 4 days of difference in the amount of time you're going to have to review the submittal and begin to react to it.
And I do think it's worth noting that what many landowners will be most, both interveners and non-interveners, will be most interested in, I suspect, is going to be all of the direct testimony by the applicants. And that'll come about in September. So I think that's one piece of good news about the process that's laid out. They'll have part of September, October, and November to make to review that. Do you have other questions?
No, that was good. I just wanted to make sure that the less technical savvy people are not emitted. I mean, there's plenty of time for them to respond and take part.
Including Mr. Smith's father. The Mr. Smith.
And Mr. Smith.
Any other questions or comments?
I might just make one comment, and without having any idea who might be listening in on the internet or whatever, is I would just point out to people that, again, I don't think it's not a stickler of a deal, and we're not going to bounce anybody if they file any way they want to. But I would remind
is joining the meeting.
I just would remind everyone that the commission, in its rule changes, has put into place an e-filing system. It's right on the homepage of the commission's website. It has sort of a walk-through process for making filings on there. And I would urge people, to the extent that you can, to use that, because our system here is set up then to very easily then get things posted on the website. We know you've intended it to be a filing. When people just randomly send emails and that, it's sometimes kind of difficult for us to figure out, what is it you're intending this to be? And if it's done on our e-filing system as a docket filing, we then know that you're intending for that to be a filing in the case as opposed to just a casual communication.
Any other comments or questions? Yes, Commissioner Hansen.
I'm rather reluctant to bring this up because I don't want to get into a lot of dialogue, and I know the answer, but... what Mr. Smith, when you said your father was, when you said the older interveners without computers, you did not mean to intimate your father was a intervener, did you?
I did not. He is not an intervener. No, I don't think so. I'm just saying I've seen how difficult it is for, I mean, I can't figure out how to run my cell phone. My son can, I can't.
I think you just wanted to make sure that you weren't biased or conflicted. And
I am not.
Okay, no, that's good. No, that's a good question. I got nervous when you said you weren't sure you were supposed to ask it. You should ask it, but it was a good question. All right, any other questions or comments? Hearing none, does anyone have a motion?
In the case of HB07-001, I will motion that we accept the procedural schedule as laid out by staff's recommendations.
Motion has been made. No second is required. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, we'll proceed to vote. Colbeck?
Aye.
Hanson?
Aye.
Johnson votes aye. Motion carries 3-0. This marks the first time TransCanada has been on the agenda, and it has taken a lot less time than I expected it would. So that's, we'll move on to the telecommunications portion of the docket, TC06-181. And this deals with the petition made by Venture Communications Cooperative for suspension or modification of local dialing parity reciprocal compensation obligations. This case was at one time transferred to the Office of Hearing Examiners, and apparently there's a chance that it may come back. So we do have a joint motion for transfer, and I see Ms. Rogers at the microphone, so she may want to take it up first. Go ahead.
Thank you. My name is Darla Poland Rogers, and I represent Venture Communications. That's the petitioning party in this docket. What I'm here to ask the commission to do today is to postpone a ruling on the joint motion. And the reason for that is that, if I could just give you a little background, when we entered into the joint motion, it was our understanding on behalf of Venture that we were not starting over in this case. And so within the joint motion, we stipulated there's not going to be any new discovery, there's not going to be any new testimony with a very limited exception, no new witnesses, no new interveners. We're not starting over. We've already gone through all of those steps in front of the hearing examiner. Since the time that we filed the joint motion, there has been some additional action that leads us to believe that perhaps there was not a meeting of the minds on the joint motion. And that has come with not only some additional testimony that we believe goes beyond the confines of the joint motion, but also introduces a brand new witness. And so we think that that definitely expands or goes beyond what the parties had agreed to in the joint motion and what prior rulings of the hearing examiner had indicated. And so what we thought was the agreement, and like I said, not reinventing the wheel, not starting the case over, but taking up where we left off and bringing it back to you, may have changed as a result of this additional filing by Altel. We have responded to that with another motion that is pending in front of the commission, but it's not on your agenda today. And we're asking the commission to make a ruling on striking all or part of that testimony and getting the case back within the confines of the joint motion that we believe the parties agreed to and that is before you today. But because these two issues and the whole scope of the hearing, if we are back in front of the commission, seems to me to be very much bound together in these subsequent actions that have happened, what I'm suggesting today is that you delay a ruling on the joint motion before you today. If Altel wants a chance to respond to our motion to strike, maybe give them a limited amount of time, then have an ad hoc meeting and let us argue all of these issues and place them before you at the same time so we know where we are on a go-forward basis. So that's what I'm asking you to do today.
Just so I can be clear before we hear from the other parties, is your intention that this would somehow affect a potential hearing date? That's the second question before the commission today.
My hope, Commissioner Johnson, is that it would not. If Altel does want to respond to our motion to strike and motion in limine, I would think they could perhaps do it by the end of this week. We kind of discussed a potential schedule, at least with staff. Maybe have an ad hoc meeting next week And then, you know, it's what it's going to depend on is how much we have to respond to on behalf of petitioner. And if it's a limited amount, which hopefully it will be, then I think we can keep the hearing dates on track. So that's our goal. We're not looking for delays here.
Well, let's hear from the other parties. I believe that's SDTA, RCC, and Altel with regards to the request made by Ms. Rogers this morning.
Good morning. This is Jason Smiley on behalf of Altel. I'm at somewhat of a disadvantage in appearing today, as I'm not totally up to speed on these proceedings. The attorney that usually handles this file is unavoidably detained in another matter, and so he asked me to appear today. The background that I have on this is relatively brief, but it's my understanding that the additional testimony and the motion to strike that's being made, I believe it is the party's intentions to have that heard at an ad hoc meeting. It's my understanding that we have 10 days to respond to the motion, which was filed on Friday, and so it would be my understanding that we'd be doing that this week. I guess I don't see any reason that the commission couldn't take this up and set a hearing date today so that it gets on the calendar. I don't think there's any question that the parties are going to want the matter moved back to the commission regardless of the outcome of the pending motion on the motion in limine. That's the extent of my understanding of what the commission's being asked to decide today, and those are the only comments that I'd add.
Thank you, Mr. Smiley. Anything from RCC or SDTA? Good morning, Mr. Coit.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioners, we understand the concerns that Venture has with respect to the motion to strike that they've also filed, and I think, you know, I suspect that, you know, we're probably not going to have any change in terms of the position of the parties and moving things back to the PUC, but I think certainly Venture should have some opportunity or ability to consider where it wants to go after the commission rules on the motion to strike. So we believe there would be some linkage between the two matters and feel that in fairness you should take up the motions together. Thank you.
Thanks, Mr. Coit. Look, staff, presumably Ms. Semler, for any comments they might have.
Thank you. This is Kara Semler for staff. If ultimately the parties want to come back to the commission regardless, it seems as if it would be cleaner if we could make the decision today to bring this back to the commission. Issue number two then, deal with the motion in limine that's been filed, and hopefully next week we can work a schedule to get an ad hoc. Number three, hearings are on the calendar tentatively for the first part of October, so in my mind, if we could deal with things that cleanly, I understand maybe there's some link between moving it back here if the decision would be different depending on how that motion in limine turns out. But if we could deal with things and moving it back here first as the first matter to address, it seems it would be cleaner.
Thanks, Ms. Semler. This is, you know, these are going to be non-attorney questions. It seems, I mean, if the case is in at OHE, would a motion in limine or a motion to strike, would that really come to the commission? Or if the case was being heard at OHE, wouldn't the NALJ there handle that?
I think that's exactly the point. The point is, how can I rule? I can't rule. How can the commission rule on the motion in limine if it hasn't been transferred back to us?
And you asked the question with half as many words and twice as much clarity as I did. So
Well, and I understand, you know, the limbo that we're in right now. The Office of Hearing Examiners has reserved a conference call to determine what happens and whether we, in fact, did get the case transferred here. Our concern from Venture's perspective is that the whole issue of whether it's going to be transferred depends a little bit on where we are with regard to the scope of the hearing. And if we're going to be back at square one and starting all over with new witnesses and everything like that, you know, then maybe we don't want to do that. We don't want to start all over. And that's why it seems to me that we at least need to be able to present those arguments all at the same time so we know where we are. I'm not sure there – I mean, I think when we entered the joint motion, there was a meeting of the minds. I'm not sure that we're there now because obviously one party has moved off in a direction that at this point we feel is contrary to the joint motion that was entered here. We've not, I mean, I tried to contact Altel's counsel to see, you know, where they were, to see if we could maybe internally or among the parties get this back on track. I was not able to contact them to get any type of an agreement to postpone this ruling today to see if we could internally figure out exactly where we were. And that, I guess that's why I am asking you to postpone it, to give us a little bit of an opportunity to get back together and see where we are and maybe to determine exactly what is going to be the scope and where are we as far as where this hearing is going to be in the stage of things if we come back before you.
So it wouldn't be any ruling by OHE or the PUC that would necessarily have an effect on where you would want the case. You're hoping to reach an agreement with other parties.
We always hope to reach an agreement. I'm not sure that that's going to happen, but I guess I think that we should. I think we would like to at least explore that. Perhaps have some dialogue with them, maybe with involvement from staff or whatever.
I guess I would just ask, and I know Mr. Smiley, you may not know the answer, but would Altel have an objection to just postponing this to give the parties a chance to try to work it out? And we would have hopefully an ad hoc meeting next week and discuss all the issues.
I guess my position at this point is that, not having an opportunity to talk to my client and sort of filling in for the counsel that typically handles this matter, my position is that I would just go with what's been filed. And currently, as far as I know, my client's position is that it would like to proceed to get a hearing date, and particularly since it's already tentatively scheduled for the 3rd and the 4th, I don't see any reason to delay keeping that on the calendar. I guess it, you know, it would be my position that it's more difficult to come back and get a hearing date than it would be to cancel it. So in the event that the parties were unable to work out the matters that are discussed here, it seems to me that a simpler solution would be to find a new date at that point and try to get something on the calendar today.
Well, and this is Commissioner Johnson, and just by way of clarification, I think regardless of whether or not the dates are set formally today, I don't think they're going anywhere. They are set administratively and tentatively on the Commission's calendar, and presumably the parties won't double schedule anything at this point either. Is that other people's understanding, or have I misspoken?
No, that's my understanding. The only question that on the dates were whether something got canceled for the commission on October 2nd and whether the parties wanted to start earlier. But that would be totally up to whether the parties were able to. But according to the person who schedules for us, October 3rd and 4th are available, and we would not be scheduling anything over that during this next week. I guess my point is, though, I still don't see how – I'm not quite sure what the point is in delaying granting the motion. Well, I guess if the parties would like to work it out, that would be the point. But otherwise, I would just, point out that we the commission will have to vote on the joint motion for transfer before it can vote on the motion to strike. Even if we have it on the same day, the parties will not know how the commission is voting on the motion to strike until such time as it has already voted on the motion for transfer, assuming that they would grant that motion. So the only reason I can see for not proceeding today is if the parties could try to work out, you know, some sort of an agreement with respect to that motion to strike.
Commissioner Johnson, again, it seems like no matter what we do have an ad hoc likely coming next week, and I think your comments are right on, Ms. Wiest. And so, but since we've got a meeting anyway, probably makes sense to postpone commission action on whether or not to grant the at least one time joint motion. So, yeah, go ahead.
And you can correct me if I'm wrong, but your fear is that we would go back to October 24th, 2006, correct, and start all over?
Well, again, my concern is that at the time we entered into the joint motion, we agreed that, you know, the reason we could bring this in front of you so quickly, which is, you know, October, and I do concur with Altel that, you know, we don't want to give up those hearing dates either.
Sure.
But it was like no new discovery, no new witnesses, no new interveners. I mean, the case comes back to you in the condition that it was in there.
And I understand. I mean, that's your fear, is that it would you'd start all over. Relaine, how real is that fear? Do you think that could happen, or if?
Well, I don't know. I mean, now I'm kind of getting into the merits of their motion to strike, and I guess I'm not prepared to actually go there at this point.
Sure. No problem. I just wondered why you have those fears. Why do you think it would start over?
Well, and I guess that's another reason why I was asking the commission to postpone this. I would be happy to get into those arguments, but where you have one party that enters into an agreement and then turns around and brings in a brand new witness, mm-hmm. you know, weeks before the trial, and they're not the moving party. We're the petitioners, which means we have to have some type of a response time. That maybe indicates to me that maybe we weren't all on the same page when we entered into this joint motion. And I guess I think that we need to at least, if I understand, you know, your point about the order of things, but at least we will be able to address the merits of that motion if it's on the calendar and before the commission at the same time.
And I guess I kind of look at the question as being either you want to be here or you don't. So, and you're saying that you can't answer that until you know you can either move on or have to go backwards. Is that what you're saying?
I believe that that's a fair statement, yes. I think that we would at least like to be able to present and preserve the argument that we shouldn't start over at square one if we are going to be back in front of you. And I don't think the way that the actions have transpired and the way they've been calendared here that we really can do that at this point because the other items are not on the docket for the commission to consider today.
Okay. Thank you.
Other commissioner or advisor comments or questions? I would move the commission to take no action on this docket today. Motion's been made. Any discussion? I would just add that, you know, it's our longstanding tradition, at least through my observation, that we do give people an opportunity to try to work things out. Often better agreements are reached that way. And to me, you know, waiting one more week is not going to be burdensome or prejudicial to any party. Any other comments by any commissioners on the motion? Hearing none, we'll proceed to vote. Colbeck?
Aye.
Hansen?
Aye.
Johnson votes aye. Motion carries 3-0. Thanks very much to all of the parties. This time we'll move to telecom item number 2, which is TC06-191. It deals with EchoStar Satellite LLC and its failure to register as a telemarketer and the solicitations they are alleged to have made to those registered on the Do Not Call list. The question for the commission today is, shall the commission grant a joint motion for delay? That motion has been filed, and we'll look first to Ms. Semler for her comments.
Thank you, Commissioner. This is Kara Semler for staff. staff and EchoStar have entered into some conversation in attempting to find the best solution for the consumers, for the commission, for EchoStar, for everyone in this matter. And we think we can find some sort of a solution. We hate to haul consumers into a hearing, and, you know, we're just looking for the best solution here. With that being said, we would a hearing was scheduled for October 2nd, and we would ask the commissioners delay. We don't have a date in mind. If we can't come to a solution, we'll come back before the commission. And certainly there's a decision on a summary judgment motion out there, too. But we'll come back to the commission if we can't reach some sort of a solution.
Thanks very much, Ms. Sumler. I didn't see anybody from EchoStar on the line. Okay. Great. Any commissioner or advisor comments or questions? Hearing none, anyone have any action?
In TC06191, I'll motion that the commission grant the joint motion to delay.
Motion's been made. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, we'll proceed to vote. Colbeck.
Aye.
Hansen.
Aye.
Johnson votes aye. Motion carries 3-0. Our final agenda item for today is TC07-083. This deals with Global Capacity Group and their request for a COA to provide both inter-exchange and local exchange services. And the question for the commission today just deals with that COA. We'll look towards staff. Mr. Rounds, Ms. Kramer, for their comments.
Thank you. This is Karen Kramer from staff. Brian left me a set of notes. On July 3rd, 2007, Global Capacity Group, Inc., filed an application for a certificate of authority to provide resold and facilities-based UNE local exchange and inter-exchange services. Global Capacity intends to provide resold local exchange and inter-exchange service and to provide local services utilizing unbundled network elements or UNE replacement through commercial agreement with Quest. Global Capacity requested a waiver from ARSD 2010-24028 and 2010-32031. Global Capacity agreed to restrictions from offering any prepaid services and from collecting customer deposits or advanced payments. Therefore, staff recommends three actions by the Commission. One, that the Commission grant inter-exchange and local exchange authority to Global Capacity subject to restrictions from accepting deposits or advance payments and from offering prepaid services, two, to comply with the rural safeguards, and three, for approval of the waiver requests.
Thanks very much, Ms. Kramer. Any questions or comments by commissioners or advisors? Go ahead.
This Quest area is statewide or?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, Quest area, he said. Right, but it's in the Quest territory.
Mr. Crate was away from the microphone, but just noted that it was his understanding that because of the rural safeguards, that this would just be in the Quest exchanges. Mr. Crate, something else to...
Well, am I correct on that? I didn't read the actual application. I just saw...
What was your question?
...the Quest agreement. And
right.
I just assumed that it was just... The Quest
areas? Right, and if you read the application, it says they are not going into any rural areas.
Okay.
Right.
And I guess I was more concerned that, is it Sioux Falls, just Sioux Falls, just Rapid City, just everything? But it's the entire, all of their areas, correct? All of the Quest areas.
Correct.
Okay.
Any other questions or comments? Hearing none, I would move the commission grant the COA subject to the restrictions and waivers recommended by staff. Any discussion on that motion? Hearing none, we'll proceed to vote. Colbeck.
Aye.
Hansen.
Aye.
Johnson votes aye. Motion carries 3-0. We do have some announcements at the end of the agenda. Does anybody else have anything to add? All right. We will stand adjourned then. Thanks much.